From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Little Richard, Otis Redding, the Allman Brothers, all big transformative musicians in their own ways, and they all made their names in a small southern city of Macon, Georgia. The Macon Sound is a new documentary about the lives and legacies of these and other influential musicians. It airs tonight on GPB Television. Executive producer and narrator Sharon Collins knows the Macon Sound up and down and joins us in the studio. Hello, Sharon.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
This was not your worst assignment, was it?
I have been in many lounges, shall we say, and enjoyed every minute of it. And also just learning the stories, talking to the daughter of Otis Redding, talking to the daughter of James Brown. I mean, it doesn't get much better.
Yeah, not bad. Well, we have Nashville, Muscle Shoals, Memphis. All of them played a part in making American music distinct. But so what are some of the other musical greats who came out of Georgia's music city of Macon?
I think that a lot of people, I did not know this, but a lot of people don't realize that by many, Little Richard is considered the creator of rock and roll. The historian, one of the historians I use is Jamie Weatherford, and he actually says, you know, Tutti Frutti.
Right.
That was the defining song of rock and roll. Now, others will dispute that, but I have a clip in the show that you just have to see where Little Richard himself says, I'm the originator, the instigator, I invented rock and roll. There wasn't any before me.
Well, I will let the viewers watch that themselves, but let's get a little bit of a clip of your conversation with Little Richard.
I was hollering. And everybody said, boy, listen to that Little Richard. And they thought I was crazy. So he's a madman, the man going insane. But I was singing Tutti Frutti, old Rudy, wop, bop-a-loo, bop-a-lop, bam-boom. I got a gal named Sue, she knows what to do. Got a gal named Daisy, she almost drive me crazy. And then wop, bop-a-loo, bop-a-lop, bam-boom. And everybody said, oh boy, where did this man come from? Macon, Georgia.
Richard Penniman, better known as Little Richard. Not known for his modesty, certainly.
No, but you know, I wish I had gotten that interview. That was done, I think, in 83. And I try, you know, I've talked with, I call him Dr. Penniman. I've talked with him about half dozen times, but he is very much in a spiritual world now. He does not want anything to do with the entertainment business, doesn't want to talk about it. We've talked about family. We've prayed together, but he just doesn't want to go there, and he would not do an interview, daggone it.
Well, that is actually a challenge for you. I mean, many of the people who are the subject of this have already passed on, but you got some fantastic footage. It must have been so much fun to go through all of that stuff.
Actually, that was the difficult part. You get these screeners, and I'm talking about hours of material, and, you know, you have to be very careful about how you're spending the money to purchase this. So I would, for example, I bought one 17-second clip just to get James Brown dropping into a split and throwing his hand up. I mean, you just have to, I mean, you really have to watch this stuff. And, you know, it sounds like fun, but going through all that video can be pretty tedious.
Over and over and over again. So let me roll back and ask, like, why Macon? What made this city a nexus for such great music?
There are a number of opinions, but one that I think holds true is, you know, Atlanta wasn't the end-all that it is today. So Macon truly is in the middle of Georgia, and all of the railroads crossed through Macon. All the Southeast railroads crossed right through Macon. And so coming or going, you were going to end up passing through that city. In addition, of course, you have the Ocmulgee River, where the barges were coming up with cotton going back and forth. So there was a lot of travel. You know, people were going through that city, and a lot of them chose to stay. And also for African Americans, you had the Douglas Theater, which was one of those few places that they could perform. So Macon had a lot going for it, and it was truly the center of the state of Georgia.
And you also found that there were some essential personalities here, the Walden brothers, Phil and Ellen Walden. Phil is now dead. You spoke with Alan at length. Why did these two white men in the segregated South of the 1960s and living in its shadow in the 70s focus on what was essentially black music initially?
Well, Phil Walden was booking these folks for his frat parties and saw an opening there. And the other interesting thing is what may be perhaps the first integrated business. Phil and Alan were partners with Otis Redding. The initial business was not called Capricorn. It was Redwall. So, you know, here you've got an African-American performer and songwriter teamed up with two managers, and they made a go of it. So Otis could get people that perhaps Alan and Phil could not.
That is fascinating. And you did talk to, among those you talked to, was Otis Redding's daughter, Carla Redding. I'm sorry, she has another last name,
Anders.
Too. Carla Redding Anders. There she is. Here she is, remembering her father, Otis Redding.
My mom raised us to appreciate what our dad died for. He didn't mistreat anyone. He only wanted to make sure that his family was taken care of. That was the main purpose behind going to work every single day. And we know that it's our right, it's our duty to make sure that his legacy is maintained because it was never tarnished.
That is Carla Redding Andrews from the documentary The Make and Sound, remembering her father, Otis Redding. The executive producer and narrator of that documentary, Sharon Collins, is with me. Boy, so hard to lose such a great man, as you can hear there, and a great talent, so young. Otis Redding died in a plane crash in 1967 at just 26. Now, this was right after recording Dock of the Bay, which later reached number one on Billboard. A number of people you spoke to said that song was a real departure for him. How?
Well, you know, he had always written music about a man and a woman and love and all of those things.
Of the blues.
Yeah. And, you know, but if you listen to the words of Dock of the Bay, it's, you know, 10 people can't tell me what to do. He was getting ready, Carla thinks, to change up his style, to cater more to the pop music. And, you know, I think he was heading in a direction where he wanted to appeal to the hippies.
Yeah.
You know, he saw the writing on the wall. And that song, unfortunately, he never really got to see how well it performed. I mean, I grew up, I'll give my age up a little bit. I grew up when that song was really a hit. And I thought it was kind of maybe a depressing thing. But when Carla tells the story, she believes, you know, this was his way of saying, I'm changing it up, and 10 people can't tell me what to do.
That's a song that is indelible in all of our minds. And there is another superstar and another daughter that you spoke to, the daughter of James Brown. But let's hear a little bit from James Brown, actually from Augusta, Georgia, but he recorded his first hit in Macon. Let's hear a little bit of another song. It's called I Got the Feeling.
I got the feeling, baby, I got the feeling. You don't know what to do to me. Leave my heart heavy.
Now that is the James Brown that we came to know and love. Now he recorded his first hit at a radio station, WIBB in Macon. Why is that significant?
I think that, again, you have to remember African Americans were still kind of held back in certain places. WIBB was traditionally the African American station. And he not only recorded his first hit there, Please, 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 but he also lived in Macon for a good while. And that is, according to his family, really where his career took off.
And it's interesting because you speak with Doug Thompson from Mercer, who says, you know, the airwaves, the radio, that was not segregated. I hadn't even thought about that, the idea that so much sound communicated to so many different people across the Jim Crow South through music.
Yeah, you can't Jim Crow an airwave.
Well, the documentary touches on the political significance of James Brown music. Of course, he was known as the godfather of soul, the hardest working man in show business, just an incredible, incredible performer. But what did you hear from the guests that you spoke to about his politics and what he did for the black movement?
Well, he was very much about get your education, you know, don't be a dropout. He really wanted people to go to school because he didn't get a chance to. But also when Dr. Martin Luther King died, it was James Brown who
saved Boston.
And also went back home to Augusta, walked up and down the street, drove up and down the street, said, you know, we have to keep this belief that nonviolence is the way to make change. He very much believed that, and his daughter is very proud of him because of that.
I just should maybe say that the Saving Boston thing, there were, you know, protests, mass protests all over in cities all over the country. And James Brown was playing Boston the night after Martin Luther King was assassinated and went in front of the crowd and said, do not riot. Do not go out there. That's not going to be the right thing. So just to clarify that. Another great artist from Macon, Percy Sledge of When a Man Loves a Woman fame. And he worked with the Walden Brothers in what would become Capricorn Records. Here is Alan Walden talking about signing him.
Yeah. Imagine Percy Sledge. Now, he is a guy straight out of the cotton patch. I'm talking about he is that country. He is an orderly at a hospital when I go over to meet him, okay? I said, Percy Sledge, I'm Alan Walden. You're gonna be a damn star. And he said, looked me straight in the eyes, and the first thing he said to me, he said, do you think I can quit this damn job? And I, you know, 4 weeks later, the man's making like 10 grand a week.
Oh, amazing to think of what the world would be missing if Percy Sledge had stayed in that job.
Well, you know, so many of these people I've talked with, take it back to James Brown. I mean, this man dined with presidents and prime ministers, and, you know, he didn't even get an education, and yet he was so successful and so smart that he crossed all those barriers. And, you know, Percy Sledge, you know, like an orderly, you know? I mean, all of them, including the Allman Brothers, they all started out with nothing. And it makes you really respect the hard work that went into it. I mean, I have a clip with Phil Walden talking about the grueling tour schedules that all of them had. I mean, a lot of these people who are successful, they would have a concert every night, like 28, 29 days out of 30.
Well, I am speaking with Sharon Collins, and we're going to be talking very soon about the Allman Brothers and Capricorn Records and more of the Macon Sound. Sharon is executive producer for the Macon Sound, and it airs tonight on GPB at 8. Stay with us as we continue this conversation. And as we head into the break, a little more of Otis Redding. This is Try a Little Tenderness.
Oh, she may be weary. Young girls, they do get weary wearing that same old shaggy dress, yeah. But when she gets weary, try a little tenderness, yeah.
From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Continuing a conversation with Sharon Collins, she is executive producer and narrator of a new GPB documentary. It's called The Macon Sound, and it is airing on GPB TV tonight. Of course, you can watch it on your own time, perhaps over the Thanksgiving holiday on GPB.org. Now, we can't really talk about Macon without talking about the Allman Brothers. Let's hear a little bit of their song, Melissa.
Come and go, yeah.
Sharon, how did this band, pretty much a bunch of long-haired hippies from Jacksonville, Florida, land at Capricorn?
Phil Walden heard Dwayne Allman play guitar and basically reached out to him and said, hey, you know, I'd like to have a band, form a band, bring it in. He did not expect all the hippies and the one African-American guy. He was thinking along the lines of Cream or, you know, a band like that. And instead, here comes this group. And
A lot of hair.
And they just like you have Little Richard bringing on rock and roll, you've got the Allman Brothers creating this sound that was dubbed Southern rock. Yeah, appropriately so, because it wasn't really rock and roll. It wasn't really blues. It wasn't really jazz, but it kind of mixed it all in. And then you took Greg Allman with that raspy voice on the Hammond organ, and it just created a sound unlike anybody had heard before, and off they were.
Off they went, and many tried to imitate them. But you talked with Chank Middleton. He was a lifelong close friend of Greg Allman, and he said, Black people loved the Allman Brothers. It's not really what we think of as a Southern rock audience today.
No, you know, Chank is African American, and he was always the gatekeeper to Greg, and I had hoped to get an interview with Greg. Chank and I talked for about a year, so I felt like I was seeing an old friend when we did this interview. And he tells a funny story. He says, you know, I was in all the Black neighborhoods. He said, you know, I was in all of them. And he said, you couldn't walk down a street that you didn't hear the Allman Brothers being played somewhere, coming out of those houses. And of course, Chank is so funny. He said, and I mean, you know, these were Black people. These are Black houses. And I was like, yeah, I get it, Chank.
Well, your documentary goes beyond the music into some really interesting stories and personalities like Chank. But you interview artists and also their children. And it sounds like many of them not necessarily followed in their parents' footsteps and became musicians, but creating kind of legacies for their families. Tell us a little bit about how they're carrying on.
Well, Carla, of course, has the Otis Redding Music Camp every year, and the performances there, I spent a few days listening and watching and seeing these kids come out and create music and learn to play instruments. It's amazing. And that is that's Otis Redding's legacy. That's what he wanted. James Brown's daughter, Deanna, has the School of Music Pupils. And she spells music M-U-S-I-K, so when you see it, I didn't make a mistake. But they do the same thing. They learn everything from, you know, how to play instruments to the business side, how to write songs, how to dance. I mean, so both of these daughters have maintained a legacy to their fathers by having music education. And both of them will tell you, if kids are into music, they will learn as much as they learn in math or any other topic, because music kind of reaches all of these things. And they stay out of trouble. You know, they feel very strongly about the education part of music and keeping kids in that. And they'd like to see it expand to schools across the state.
Well, that is one way of carrying on to the next generation, because, you know, when you look at, and you spoke to several people who they're still performers in and around Macon, but they do much better in Europe, right? They go there and they've got an audience. There's a much more broad sense of music taste. But there's a way that Macon feels, I don't know, until I watched this, I thought it was a little frozen in amber, you know, that it was stuck in a certain period of when it was great. Did you see that Macon sound carrying on?
Absolutely. I mean, there are performers there that come through there. They have a number of venues where there are performances. Grant's Lounge, people are jamming there. The Back Porch Lounge, where I met Robert Lee Coleman, who played with Percy Sledge and James Brown. I met Big Mike and the Booty Papas at Grant's Lounge. there's just always music. As one of the folks was telling me, I think it was Big Mike, a lot of these people, if you are a performer and you need a band, you can go to Macon and pick up whatever you need because you have these very talented guitarists and drummers. And so Macon still holds that charm for a lot of performance. Let's get our band together in Macon.
Well, of course, the music business has changed a lot, and Capricorn Records, which once had 500 employees, has gone through its own iterations, moved from place to place. Eventually, Nashville relaunched in Nashville. Kenny Chesney, one of its early artists. And in Macon itself, Jason Aldean. Am I saying that right? Jason Aldean. So it's becoming a little bit of a place for country music. How is that shift being received in Macon?
I think that it's being received very well. I mean, you've got Jason Aldean, who he's voted for the Academy of Country Music Entertainer of the Year. I think I've got that right. You've got this mix. He's not for a country purist. He's got a little rock and roll thrown in there, and maybe a little blues. So again, you've got this mix, and he is one heck of an entertainer on stage. And then I also interviewed a young man who has a song trending, and it's about getting a fake ID so you can buy beer. It's straight up country. Travis Denning, and he talks about how you could make it in Macon. You cut your chops there because there are all these places that you can play and try your music out. And so you have a better chance of maybe, you know, being heard there. And actually, he's with Universal and in Nashville and is trending. And he wrote some songs for Jason Aldean as well. So, country's coming along.
Mm-hmm. So you know Georgia better than I think anybody I know. You've done all sorts of documentaries and traveled the small towns of Georgia all over the place. Did you learn anything new doing this documentary, or something surprising to you that you want to pass on to listeners?
I think that Macon is going to surprise everyone. I'd say within 10 years, Macon is going to be the place to be. There's a rhythm there. I can't put my finger on it, but my associate producer said I would move here. And I can promise you, if they had a fast rail train, I would be there a lot. it's gone down a little bit, and now it's coming back up. And I think they're redoing the Capricorn Studios. Mercer University is there, and they are interested in seeing the music play on. So I think Macon is gonna surprise folks, I believe.
Okay, so people are going on Zillow right now, looking at Macon, thanks to you. Sharon Collins, thank you so much for speaking with us.
My pleasure.
Sharon Collins, she's executive producer and narrator of The Macon Sound. It airs tonight at 8 o'clock on GPB.
One, two, three, hit it! Watch me!